Bruce Shapiro, tell me about, we might talk a bit about the dreary dead-end politics of the sequester later, but perhaps not. let's look at Manning, please.
Indeed, a remarkable thing. You know, Private Bradley Manning has, of course, been court-martialed in the WikiLeaks inquiry. Up until now, hasn't said what he did and whether he did it, but last week at what's called a Providence hearing, Corporal Manning did...
Bruce, are you banging something for emphasis as you talk to me? Because there's a thump coming through like a tympanum.
Not so far as I can tell.
Okay. Far away.
Corporal Manning, in what's called a Providence hearing, a sort of preliminary court-martial hearing, pleaded guilty to a single count of having leaked those documents. Now, the military prosecutor has another 12 counts.
I know what it is, Bruce. Can you just back off the mouthpiece a little? That's what's causing the problem, and fire away.
Now there I am, heeding the advice of the wonderful Paul Goff to talk as close to the mic as I can. he pleaded guilty to a single count, not guilty to a dozen others, including violating the Espionage Act. We may get to that. But what was really remarkable was the statement, the sort of the confession that he made in this attempted plea for a single count, in which Corporal Manning described himself really as leaking as an act of civil disobedience. He described himself as a whistleblower motivated by his growing concern as an intelligence analyst with the course of the war on the ground in Iraq. He learned, for example, or he became concerned that America was obsessed with what he described as capturing and killing human targets in Iraq at the expense of paying attention to what that would do on the ground. He wanted to, he said, spark a debate on the role of the military by releasing these documents. And in particular, one thing that really caught my eye and I found haunting and to me really speaks to his motivations. He described his growing concern that as a intelligence officer, he was providing information to American forces on the ground and to very abusive federal police in Baghdad. He said that if I continued to assist the Baghdad federal police in identifying the political opponents of Prime Minister al-Maliki, those people would be arrested and very likely tortured and not seen again for a very long time. This is the classic, he's speaking in the classic voice of the prisoner of conscience, the classic voice of the whistleblower, the classic voice of someone committing an act of civil disobedience and really risking everything in order to do so. It's the polar opposite of the person who's been described. You know, variously we've heard of him as a perhaps a disturbed person. We've heard from the prosecutor talk of espionage. There are still charges outstanding of aiding the enemy.
But Bruce, his day in court could be immensely embarrassing to Washington.
Well, it could be. Washington, this has the Pentagon and has the Obama administration in a tough spot because on the one hand, clearly, the Pentagon prosecutor wants to make an example of Manning to other would-be leakers. So that's why the military prosecutor has said that they intend to continue pursuing these much tougher espionage charges and aiding the enemy charges, which could lead to life in prison for Bradley Manning. On the other hand, the kind of leaking that Bradley Manning is accused of is really, it's clear from this statement, no different from the kind of leaks that cross the desks of reporters in Washington all the time. And this really challenges the Justice Department, which has been looking, as we know, at WikiLeaks and at Julian Assange with a grand jury in Virginia that has been sort of ongoing. If Bradley Manning's statement is accurate, really he is the actor in this. And the idea that WikiLeaks was somehow going out and procuring documents isn't the case. Nothing Manning said suggests that. And it's also clear that, in fact, other American journalists, political journalists, investigative journalists, were offered Bradley Manning's documents. He went shopping, as sources sometimes do, before going to WikiLeaks. He tried the New York Times, left a message on the voicemail of the public editor, didn't really know how to navigate that internal bureaucracy of the newspaper, tried to talk to a reporter at the Washington Post who didn't quite get the import of what he was describing, before finally settling on WikiLeaks as the channel that was best. He'd been aware of WikiLeaks, and actually, interestingly, Manning describes having used information from WikiLeaks on arms trafficking to strengthen some of his own intelligence reports. This may not be what Julian Assange had in mind, but it seems that one intelligence analyst, at least, was relying on WikiLeaks for his work. But, the main thing going on here is that Bradley Manning, A, is describing himself as a prisoner of conscience, and he also is describing a situation in which continued prosecution on these tougher charges, while perhaps sending a message within the military to pay attention to classification rules and we don't want people leaking all over the place, could have a real chilling effect on business as usual in journalism in Washington and elsewhere in the United States. His statement, I think, really ups the ante in the press freedom aspect of the WikiLeaks case.
Well, as you know, I visited Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy, and we talked about Bradley Manning at considerable length, and what Manning is saying about himself is what Julian said about him at the time. But he also made the point that he's been the conditions of his imprisonment have been quite appalling. Tell us about those.
Well, that was the subject of an earlier hearing some weeks ago, especially early on in his incarceration. Manning was kept in near complete isolation, was viewed as a suicide risk, or allegedly viewed as a suicide risk, and was therefore kept with little clothing in a bare cell and had to subject himself to all sorts of inspections all the time in really humiliating conditions. That seems to have stopped. He still has, doesn't have access to anyone outside of his attorneys, is still being treated as a national security threat, everything except being shipped to Guantanamo.
Okay, let's go back to the point you were making, and I did interrupt, and that's the impact on journalism of what's going on.
Well, WikiLeaks, of course, was very controversial. It remains controversial within American journalism. Julian Assange remains controversial. There are an awful lot of people who felt that the mass release of WikiLeaks documents endangered sources and might not be the way, the New York Times would have handled it on its own. That said, American journalism rises and falls on the strength of its relationships, of reporters' relationships with sources. In any major newspaper, in any major broadcast organization, every week someone is wandering in and dropping an envelope full of stuff that they're not supposed to have on the desk of some reporter. The prosecution of Manning under these very tough espionage and aiding the enemy charges, as opposed to merely leaking classified information and some of the other – and the lower level charge that he has pleaded guilty to, really could make it much more difficult for American investigative reporters and political reporters to work with sources in Washington. And I think it's possible that this eloquent an interesting plea statement by Manning. They get the attention of press freedom organizations and focus a little attention on that risk. That what we're talking about here is a government employee who wanted to influence American debate. And you do that by making documents public. Manning himself repeatedly says this in discussing the collateral death video, the video of two Reuters journalists being killed by an Apache helicopter along with other civilians, in discussing this business with the Baghdad police. In others, he keeps saying, I wanted to influence American debate. That's what journalism does.
Yeah.
That's what Daniel Ellsberg was doing in 1970 when he leaked the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times and Washington Post. And it's really now hard to see Manning as anything except a bearer of that tradition of leaking, a tradition that goes back to the very first days of the Republic when someone in the government leaked President Washington's account books to a newspaper that didn't like him very much. So Manning has placed himself on a continuum of leakers and on a continuum of civil disobedience.
Bruce, as you know, I'm about to have a session on Ms. Hellman. But before we go to Lillian, I want you to tell the listener about Lucille.
Indeed, Lucille Dickus. This is another person acting outside the mainstream of American politics. My New Haven neighbor, Lucille Dickus, who died this week at 79. I guarantee that Gladys have not heard of her. But in 1984, Lucille Dickus was the president of the Clerical and Technical Workers Union at Yale University. She was a secretary, and she became president of the Clerical Workers Union and led that union on a long, bitter strike, went on for months, that became a flashpoint in the history of American labor, because it was the first strike anywhere over the principle of comparable work for jobs traditionally held by women. On strike for respect was the slogan. It not only turned Yale upside down and got attention from the New York Times and Time Magazine and so on. It paved the way, Lucille paved the way, for a new generation of female labor leaders in the United States and for unionism looking at these traditionally female jobs in new ways and incorporating those into American labor. She was a spirited fighter until the end. A few years ago, she said, you know, first I was a daughter, and then I was a wife, and then I was a mother, but I wasn't really a woman until I joined the union and joined the sisterhood of Local 34. This was one of the great eloquent voices in American labor, too little known, but someone who changed the history of the American workplace.
Bruce, thanks for that. And Bruce came to us via Skype. Bruce Shapiro has been my friend on this program now for, 11 years, and he's the executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma. He's just been talking about a clarion call, a voice of the left. I'm about to talk about another, Lillian Hellman, RN, on, sorry, LNL, on RN.